Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It In The Ring Radio Network of One. David Duenez, I'm your host, Steve K9 Kim. And folks, got a little adjustment for this week's show. Our resident hippie, he's just not the same guy since he moved to San Francisco, Gabriel Montoya, is at Burning Man. And so joining me this week is a great replacement, a pinch hitter of the ilk of Manny Mota or Dave Hansen, David Duenez, the president of the Leave It In The Ring Radio Network. Double D, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, thanks for having me as the co-host here. I guess we started off with a rocky start. We had the intro of Leave It In The Ring come on instead of the next round. That threw me off right away. But hey, we're here to do it. And I'm doing the replacement for Mr. Gabriel Montoya because he's out there living many clouds of smoke at the Burning Man.
You know, he did that last year, and I was under the impression, obviously I was incorrect, that this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. He's just going to try it, and then looks like he might be doing this every year from this point forward. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in, our phone lines are filling up right now, 347-215-7598, 347-215-7598, and if you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at LITR Boxing or at Steve UCN Live. We might be here for 60 minutes, and the show, with enough callers, enough activity, we'll extend it all the way to 90. Let's get right into the first story here, Dave. The big story last week was a catfight outside the ring between two former BFFs, and they are just like the hip-hop version of a Taylor Swift song. 50 Cent and Floyd are battling again, and obviously Floyd took the brunt of this. Dave, be honest, do you give a damn if Floyd Mayweather can read or not?
You know, I got to tell you, no, I don't. I mean, is he going to be the spokesman for boxing after he leaves the sport? Absolutely not. I think we all know that he's in it for himself, or more or less he's in it to help out whoever's surrounding and rubbing his feet and rubbing his back. But other than that, I really don't care. I find it very comical. But you know what, Steve? In some way, I start wondering whether or not this is a gimmick and this is a way to keep Floyd's name into the news and keep his name out there to keep us interested. Because slowly but surely, you know, fans are falling off. Fans are kind of getting fed up with this kid in terms of him not taking on the fights that fans really want. He keeps trying to feed it in our head that Houdini trick to fans, saying, "Well, this is I'm giving you the fight that you guys are asking for," which was not the Madonna one in the beginning, and the rematch obviously is not the one a lot of fans want. So, is this just a ploy for 50 Cent to help him out to get him out there? Are they really feuding, or are they just doing this to kind of pull the sheet over our eyes?
No, I think this is real because I think 50 is still very salty over the fact he stuck him with a bill of goods and some toxic assets in the form of Billy Dibb and Yuri Gamboa and a bunch of other guys that they were supposed to be partners on. And I think once Mayweather got out of jail, he was basically talked out of it, I believe, by Al Haymon to not go with 50 Cent, not be his own company for the time being, and eventually he has gotten his promotional license. And I believe 50 feels deserted. And you know what's funny? If I got stuck with some of that bill of Billy Dibb and Gamboa, I would be angry too. And it's one thing to start an imaginary beef or a fake fight. This here, in many respects, when you call a guy illiterate, no matter how much money he has, that is humiliating. And going back to my original point, Floyd Mayweather is Floyd Mayweather. He's not Floyd Mensah. We never liked him outside of anything, if you like him at all, except for his boxing ring IQ. He is a boxing savant. This is what he's been bred to do in many ways. He was never going to go to Harvard or Stanford or Yale. That simply was not going to be in his DNA. So what do we expect? I mean, a lot of these boxers are taken out of school early. There's no college scholarships. And let's be very honest about this. There are a lot of athletes that basically are functional illiterates, but because of their athletic prowess are pushed through the system. But I will say this, where Floyd brings this on himself, and I mentioned this on Twitter, Dave, people will say, well, that's personal business outside the ring. We shouldn't even bring it up. You know, Dave, I don't disagree.
Right.
No, I don't. But when Floyd is talking about Manny's taxes and Manny has to beg like a dog and he's made fun of other people for stuff that has nothing to do with the stuff actually inside the ring, guess what, Dave? He brought it on himself.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, if you're going to start throwing rocks at a glass house, and you, which you own one yourself, then you're going to expect them to be thrown back. That's on him. You know, I find it, you know what I find really funny is that you have certain supporters of Floyd Mayweather that are right there with him when he's making fun of somebody. But as soon as that the tables are turned, they're the very first ones to start making videos and saying, hey, don't make fun of him. It's not right. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't, you know, talk about this guy stuttering and the fact that he can't read. It's like, come on, guys. Really? You know, you act like you never went through elementary. You act like you didn't go to junior high. You act like you didn't even go to high school where everybody was cap on. If you came with different color socks, it was going to be remembered all the way down to graduation. That's just the way it is, the way society is built up.
Yeah, I would say in this instance, this was karma. And with Vic, I've always said, there are two types of people you don't want to feud with. That is rappers who are very famous and very famous comedians, because you are just adding fuel to their fire and you are going to become a comedic riff. And I think Mayweather's finding out one thing. There's a lot of things he can control inside the ring in the sport of boxing and also the business. But when it starts getting to pop culture, and people can accuse 50 Cent of being desperate, looking for attention, or being a jilted lover. Not necessarily disagreeing with any of that.
No.
But 50 Cent is also very, very savvy. And he knows Floyd very, very well. And I've always said, I think one day it's going to come to a point where I think 50 will start to open up the closets and see what kind of skeletons there are. I wouldn't be surprising if he came out with a diss track. And listen, one guy is a platinum-selling artist. The other guy did Filthy Rich Records. That is an absolute mismatch on behalf of 50 Cent. But there was a part of me, I'm not going to lie to you, that felt bad for Floyd Mayweather. He's never said that he was the smartest ever. He just said he was the best ever at boxing. But then I do realize he did it to himself. You know, likable guys, like if Manny Pacquiao, if he tried to read English, it wouldn't sound good. But, you know, Manny generally is a very nice, amiable individual, and we leave those guys alone. Floyd simply has not had that type of cachet with the public. Dave, what do you think is your prognosis? Rock Nation and Jay-Z, I think, to be blunt, overpaid for this fight between Peter Coolin and Matvey Korobov, literally coming out of nowhere to win that purse bid for the WBO middleweight title at $1.9 million. I think, do we take them seriously?
Well, obviously you got to take them seriously with that money being brought in, but you don't take them seriously in terms of they didn't do their homework. That, to me, is really the start of a bad relationship if you're trying to be a promoter in the sport of boxing, because you're trying to make a return. 50 Cent should know about that. So when you talk about Billy Dib and Gamboa, he didn't make back the money he put in. He lost a lot of his money, didn't do very well with it. And if you're trying to be a suave in the sport in boxing as a promoter, you're going to need the right team. I think they started off by picking up one of them ex-employee of Golden Boy. It's a smart thing to do, but obviously, he didn't advise him correctly about how to bid for certain fights, especially Peter Quillen. I mean, look, he's a good fighter, but is he a big draw? Not yet. Not in the sport of boxing. He's still got a long way to go.
Dave, let's just look at the facts here. I like Peter Quillen. He's a pretty good fighter. I think he's been very protected. As Gabriel Montoya, my usual colleague, says, he has the Heyman Shield, and he's never headlined a show on premium cable, HBO or Showtime, yet they paid nearly $2 million for this against the relatively unknown Matvey Korobov. The big question is, when and where will this fight be, and also what network? I'm not certain it's going to be on HBO or Showtime. I think both have a little bit of interest, but Dave, I don't know if they're willing to pay $1.9 million. Think about that. That is a license fee greater than most Golovkin fights. And also, they also talked about November 8th being the date. Well, this is another story, Dave. Sergey Kovalev is going to defend his WBO title and try to unify against Bernard Hopkins. That fight was announced last week by Main Events and Golden Boy, November 8th in Atlantic City. So there's a lot of things here to work out. And speaking of which, Dave, if you're an HBO subscriber, up until October 18th, Dave, are you one of these people that watches things like Game of Thrones and Boardwalk Empire, or are you just a guy that does this for the boxing? And if you are, do you think about canceling your subscription? Because they don't have boxing for basically 10 weeks, Dave.
Yeah, I saw that. And a good thing for them, HBO, is that I am one of the followers of Games of Thrones, and I watch, you know, True Blood just finished, and I'm trying to stick with the leftovers, but you know, good for them. I watch the shows, but if I wasn't one of those guys that were adamant about watching whatever series they put on their network, I'd probably be one of the guys that says, you know, I'm going to cancel my subscription until they put the sport back on.
Yeah, and Dave, I hear the argument. I've talked to people at HBO, and they always say, Steve, we don't want to sacrifice quality for quantity. So we'd rather go off a week here or a week there to have a certain level of fight. Now, I completely agree with that. But at the same time, Dave, why can't there be a middle ground? You're really telling me we have to wait 10 weeks in between for you guys to put together a decent fight? I think, to me, you've got to have somewhere of a gray area where it just can't be black or white. And personally, when you're the biggest platform or the most lucrative platform or the most important platform in boxing, I just don't think it is healthy for anyone involved, including the network branding, for HBO to essentially take off from the first week of August to the middle of October, on October 18th, when Gennady Golovkin takes on Marco Antonio Rubio. And Dave, I'm a native of Southern California. I'm a big advocate of Gennady Golovkin. I got to tell you, Dave, I don't want to sound like a fan, but I am very, very excited about the prospect of Golovkin actually fighting in the Los Angeles area.
So am I. You know, I always often wonder, even when they used to do with Sergio Martinez, they used to take him down there when he had a big fan base in Southern California. Gennady finally going to bring him down here. He's got the Mexican appeal. Mexican fans been wanting to see him live. It's a great way and a great chance to showcase him, to really see if that fan base is really, really alive and solid like a lot of folks believe in.
Yeah, Dave, I put this up on Twitter. It's kind of a challenge for all those fans, and I've seen them at the Forum at the Marquez Alvarado fight, and I've seen them numerous times at the StubHub/Home Depot Center. He's the most popular non-Mexican among Mexican fans I've ever seen. I mean, he gets mobbed, and I think a lot of that has to do not only his personality, but that his style is very reminiscent of a classic Mexican fighter. I think he's one of the closest things I've ever seen to Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., JC superstar. And now the question is, if you're willing to get an autograph or a picture for free, and you say you're a big fan, at the same time, are now you going to put your money where your mouth is and pay $50 to $200 to actually go see him ply his trade? And I think it's very important that they have a Mexican dance partner in Marco Antonio Rubio. And Dave, I think they actually got a little bit lucky. I think Rubio in this setting, regardless of the fact he may not have a legitimate belt, I think fits better than Sam Solomon.
I have to agree with you. You know, I know a lot of people are thinking Rubio is, he's, you know, over the hill. It could be possibly he's been in too many wars, but he brings experience. And I think that's what Gennady needs. He needs somebody that's going to be right in front of him, that's going to be able to possibly take as much punishment he can give and take to Gennady. And at the same time, give us a good show. However many rounds it's going to go, we're going to see Rubio put some tricks in there. He did it with David Lemieux. He's done it in the past. He knows how to use the ropes. He knows how to jab. He does have some footwork. But he's going to be there to be hit. But he's also going, not only is he not going to be there just to be hit, he's also going to be there to return the shots. And that's what's going to make it an exciting 4, 5, or even 6-round fight.
I think Golovkin is a heavy favorite. I think this is a gauge. Rubio is a good, solid fighter. I don't know if he's really an elite middleweight, but I give him credit. He's the only guy willing to take this fight. That's the bottom line. And, you know, Sam Solomon, I thought, was going to be the opponent, and Sam Solomon is now fighting Jermaine Taylor. Dave, I'm just going to say it very simply. Shame on anyone involved in that fight, specifically Lou DiBella, who years ago said, I in good conscience cannot work with Jermaine Taylor. Did Lou DiBella lose his conscience?
Oh, he lost his conscience pretty quick when he started talking to Al Heyman again. And, you know, I'm surprised with Al Heyman. You know, Al Heyman really, what I've heard is he got involved in the sport because of the advantages that were taken over his brother. You know, his brother was chewed up and spit out, and he vowed, I'm going to come in and try to protect fighters and get money what they're worth for, so at least they can walk away with some type of retirement money in their pocket. He's kind of selling out Jermaine Taylor pretty quick. He's, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. It's terrible.
You know, you
could
say that he's passed every test, that the commissions have green-lighted him, and he's gone through all these diagnostics. Here's the problem with that, Dave. I heard that, and I've seen it, and written about Muhammad Ali prior to his fight with Larry Holmes.
Right.
Brother Taylor was allowed to fight long past his most functional days as a fighter. Vivian Harris has been allowed to fight in Las Vegas, even though he looks like a risk to himself. There was a time when you had a brain bleed like a Joe Messi, you were effectively barred for your own safety. I don't know what has changed, but I didn't say that I was trying to save boxing or that I'm doing this for Jermaine Taylor. Lou DiBella, to me, comes off as a complete hypocrite. I would like to know what changed as it relates to Jermaine Taylor and his physical state. And I still remember the nature of that knockout against Arthur Abraham, which effectively knocked him out of the Super Six. Dave, I don't need any tests to tell me that looked like a guy that should never lace on a pair of gloves again.
I have to agree with you completely. And what's changed for Lou DiBella? I guess if he would be willing to let us look into his bank account, that's probably what made the change of mind for him and the change of heart.
Dave, there's no doubt in my mind. I think he's a desperate guy. And once you work with Al Heyman to a certain degree, you lose a certain amount of your morality because you're going to be doing things at his discretion. And you're basically a puppet. And Lou DiBella is now one of these guys willing to eat at the trough of Al Heyman. Folks, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's get to a couple of tweets here before we hit the phone lines. Jimmy and Leia, they said, Steve, what do you mean? I thought GGG was a Mexican. Very good point. Here's one from Tyler Cruz. Hey, Steve, what do you think about Lucien Boutte being trained by Freddie Roach? Dave, here's the interesting part. I saw Boutte at the Wild Card a couple of weeks ago. Now, Freddie told me that was a trial, and that unless he could devote some time to him, real time, not just punching in the clock and seeing him at the gym and patting him on the back every half hour, he really didn't want to work with Boutte because it wouldn't be fair to him. It is now been announced officially that Manny Pacquiao is going to train in the Philippines. This causes some problems with Freddie because Miguel Cotto may not want to go to the Philippines. Okay, I think that's going to be one issue. And number two, Lucien Boutte, he may not want to go to the Philippines. I just don't see logistically, Dave, this working out.
I don't see it either. I mean, you know what? When you have too many superstars under your banner, there's always going to be friction. There's always going to be something there. So, you know, look at Miguel Cotto, how he announced himself with Sergio Martinez that he's now on the A-list. Why would he want to budge for Manny Pacquiao? He's right now an ultra-high in his career. He just defeated Sergio Martinez and got the middleweight title, the Lanier title. But, you know, before you get into anything else, I want to mention something. I don't know why, but every time I hear somebody negotiating with Al Heyman, I don't know about you, Steve, but this is the image that I picture in my head. You remember the movie Pulp Fiction where Bruce Willis is talking to Maurice what was the guy's name? Maurice or something. I can't remember his name. Remember the Band-Aid in the back of his head? I always picture – that's the picture image I have right now of Lou DiBella sitting across from Al Heyman is that little segment there from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. You're basically an employee. You are.
Yeah.
When you work with Al Heyman, you effectively work for Al Heyman. Here's one from Jose Santa Cruz. Golden Boy Promotions is part of Kovalev-Hopkins' HBO fight. Does that mean the war is over between them? Dave, I think it's the first step of them working together regularly, but I still think there are a lot of Cold War issues that remain.
I think there's a lot of behind themselves of what they're going to do. What's the next move? You know, I've always said that first lawsuit with Main Event, it's what really opened up the doors, and then everything just started falling down with like dominoes. But, you know, I don't think it's something that Golden Boy or anybody else is going to forget really easily. Even when there's a lot of money involved, I still think that there's something there that they're trying to figure out to just make that next move to see who's successful and making that that next move and being the bigger person, the bigger picture of what's going on in the promotional game.
The next step, in my opinion, the next shoe to drop, I think, is Canelo Alvarez. I mean, everyone's talking about this Cotto fight as if it's a fait accompli for next year. I think that's going to be on HBO. I do believe that Oscar De La Hoya is going to make the move to HBO as he frees himself from the relationship with Al Haymon. And a lot of that stuff still has to be worked out contractually. And it's funny, I haven't heard, I'm trying to get as much information as I can about Canelo's next fight, which might be November 15th. Are we sure Showtime's going to have it? Because if Showtime gets it, Dave, think about it. They are effectively promoting a fight for HBO if it's going to be Cotto Alvarez next. So I think that's kind of a catch-22 situation for them. We'll see how that plays out. And here's one last tweet from Joshua. As always, ask Pro Bowl Rios for November and Bradley's return. Pro Bowl Rios in November, as of right now, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Brandon Rios' representative are going to give a thumbs up to that fight. As for Bradley's return, to be honest with you, Dave, I don't even think Top Rank knows what they're going to do with Tim Bradley.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard anything about Tim Bradley. You know, it's funny, I talked to one of his representatives this past weekend, and you know what? We didn't even bring up the topic. We just kind of left it alone. We were talking about other things. So couldn't help out the Twitter follower right there on that one.
You know, I think one of the issues that Tim Bradley has is that his contract has a very, very high minimum based on him re-signing with Golden Boy. So you could say he could take a lesser fight. The issue is, now you still got to pay Tim Bradley an exorbitant amount. So that's why there was some talk of him fighting Miguel Cotto, which I thought to me was absolutely farcical, given the fact if you're going to make that fight at 155, all I could say is from a pay-per-view perspective, good luck with that, because
right,
Cotto would be making a mockery of the middleweight title by fighting at 155. And Dave, let's be honest about this. Tim Bradley can't really punch that well at 140. Much less 155. To me, that would have been a top incest promotion by Bob Arum if that would have came to fruition. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Dave, let's get to the phone lines.
When I spoke to their handler, you know, when their handlers told me about that, Diaz obviously is a very when he spoke to me, he told me straight up, it's not going to happen. Even though Timothy has fought his career as an amateur at 152, I just don't see it. He'd be too bulky. It'd make him slower. We wouldn't have any advantages in that fight. And I agreed with him. I think it was really Timothy Bradley and his dad or and his other folks that are, you know, really close to him. They thought they probably had a better chance and more of a chance that they could bring some power up the way, you know, a lot of folks thought Porter was going to do.
Yeah, we'll see. One of the issues with Bradley, he's a very good fighter. He's as accomplished as anyone in the last 4 or 5 years. If you look at his resume, it's impressive in a lot of ways.
Right.
But as of this moment, he's much better as a B-side against the Manny Pacquiao. And with that number now that you have to pay him, I just don't know if the economics don't work out. And that's one of the prices you pay. They wanted so bad to keep him away from Golden Boy or Mayweather Promotions that Top Rank had to overpay him to get back into the ring again with Manny Pacquiao. Now, it's great because they did. Here's the downside, Dave. The rest of the contract.
Right. Right. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, like most fight fans, we want to see the Cold War end, I think, but more importantly, a lot of the fighters want to see this Cold War end, and I think Timothy Bradley is one of them because he's being shelved right now, and like you said, Top Rank doesn't know what to do with him, and there's a lot of great fights out there for him, but that war has to end in some way, somehow,
well,
in some form.
Dave, you bring that up. Think about it. Here's a fight that I think absolutely should happen in a perfect world, and both guys need it, and they don't have any dance partners right now. How about Tim Bradley against Keith Thurman at 47? That's a good fight.
Awesome fight. Great fight. We really find out where Keith Thurman's at. and Bradley. I mean, you know, Bradley, when the both times we saw him really get pressured, and it wasn't by a really big welterweight, it was with Manny Pacquiao, their main complaint and excuse was their knees and their ankles. I said this a while back on Leave the Ring. I said he kind of reminds me of the other fighters that we've seen in the past that were great athletes, but slowly but surely their bodies just started to betray them because of their gifts. And we didn't end up seeing what they were really going to form out as a prime fighter. Timothy Bradley might be on that road. Sergio Martinez obviously was, even though he's up in age. But Timothy Bradley's body, it's just falling apart.
You think so? Really?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, just look at the amount of injuries so far as a welterweight. You know, his knees, his ankles, everything's kind of blown out. Every time you talk to them, he's being iced up. He was in a cast. I don't know. I just keep thinking, little by little, I don't think the skill level is going to deteriorate, but I think his body's just not going to hold up to it to keep him in this game of boxing. I just think it's just going to betray him at some point. I think maybe within two or three more fights, I think that's the end of Timothy Bradley's career.
Interesting. All right, Dave, let's get to the phone lines. I understand we have a lot of calls. If you want to call in, folks, 347-215-7598.
All right, let's go with our first caller here. Let's go with area code 585. You're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, who
clear,
is it?
It's Jake from Rochester.
Jake, welcome aboard to the next round.
Thank you. What do you guys think about this whole, from my analysis, I saw what the WBC, WBA, and the IBF all go on some sort of retreat together to come to some sort of consensus. And then when they come back, all of a sudden, they're enforcing all these mandatories and behaving like, you know, ideally what you would want a sanctioning body to behave like. Do you see them getting in the way of a Cotto Caneo fight? I mean, it looks like they're trying to enforce Triple G as Cotto's mandatory. I mean,
well, Jake, let me talk about that. And that's something I need to ask somebody on Wednesday at the press conference here in L.A. If indeed the WBC interim title of Rubio is on the line by rule, and again, Jake, their rules are very flexible, if you know what I mean.
Right.
If Golovkin wins as expected, in theory, yes, Golovkin would become Cotto's mandatory. But remember this, Jake. He could just dump the title and say, I have the linear title. So it may not matter anyway.
Do you see a possibility of, say, Cotto Caneo in December?
No, it will not happen in December. Both sides have told me, Dave, I don't know if what you've heard, but that fight will not take place till next year, and I get the sense that the parties involved with Cotto Canelo, I think they're going to have that on the Cinco de Mayo date next year as a power play against Showtime and Mayweather.
I think so, too. I think that's it's always been gearing up. If, with Canelo, if he had, won over Lara, and rightfully so. I mean, why not? You know, and so many rights, so many Mexican Americans and Mexicans feel that date should be to a Mexican, not to a Floyd Mayweather.
I just read in the LA Times that Manny Pacquiao just picked himself in the Filipino pro basketball draft. What do you guys think about that?
There must be a very, very shallow pool of talent in the Philippines, because Manny Pacquiao is about the size of Muggsy Bogues, and I don't think he has the game of Muggsy Bogues, okay?
It was a Vince McMahon-esque move, so I just wanted to get that kind of...
Yeah, so when it comes to contract talks, Jake, is he going to negotiate against himself? How does he count against the salary cap of the PBA?
Well, it might be a good way to solve his tax problems, possibly.
Right?
Jake, is there anything else we could do for you?
No, thank you.
All right, Jake, thank you for joining us. Call in soon, okay?
Let's
you want to call
area...
in? Go ahead.
Let's take area code 760. You're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, what up, fellas? It's Julio. How you doing?
Julio, welcome to the next round.
Hey, man, I mean, you tweeted out a little bit a while ago, host Tito Lopez after a tune-up was in line for MiraCon. Is that still in effect?
I was told by someone that works with Jose Cito that that's being discussed and that's been brought up by Al Heyman. But I have to be honest with you, as much as I like Jose Cito, I don't know if that would be enough to catapult Amir Khan to a fight that he wants so badly against Floyd Mayweather. And I know Amir Khan, and I actually tweeted that, I think, about 10 days ago. Amir Khan has mentioned the likes of Robert Guerrero and I think one other name. I think the bottom line is, like a lot of these Heyman clients, they don't have much of a say-so, in my opinion. I think they're given assignments with a certain amount of money. It's basically a take-it-or-leave-it proposition in a lot of ways.
Oh, okay. And you guys know anything about when and who for Keith Thurman next?
Dave, have you heard anything regarding one time? I know I haven't.
I haven't at all. You know, nothing at all about him. I think that he's like every other Al Heyman fighter out there, just wondering, yeah, who am I going to fight next? I don't think they don't get to find out until 2 months down the line, or even if they're given that much of a grace period of time of knowing who they're going to fight. You know, so I don't know. You're in the dark like us, brother.
All right, fellas, that's all I got, man. Thanks a lot.
Julio, thank you for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Dave?
Let's go with area code 703. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. On the next round, what's on your mind?
What's up, guys? Good evening.
Good. Who is this?
This is Louis from Walden.
Louis, where have you been recently? We missed you.
Oh, man. Basically going nuts on summer, you know, Monday nights, going crazy.
Okay. I hear you. What can we do for you?
Listen, you guys were talking about Timothy Bradley. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing that Alexander rematch at 147.
No, really? Really?
Well, I mean,
can I just say something, my good friend from The Wire, Mr. Stringer Bell of TNR? I was at that fight in the Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. That was one of the most utterly forgettable, quote-unquote, important fights. Now, my point is, do you want to watch Geely, the sequel, or Waterworld 2? You really want to see that dog of a fight again? Really?
Oh, man. No, listen, I think, no, I agree. I mean, I just think that at 147, Alexander could make for a better fight. And they're both come from losing fights right now. So is Ruthland. So I wouldn't mind seeing Timothy Bradley in those two fights. But
I don't even think they would want to see that fight happen again. It's true, <brother.
laughs> for Keith Thurman, didn't you guys write? I think it was you, Steve. Write something about Abreu in UCM Keith Thurman.
What I wrote was the quote of Sean Secret Service Gibbons, who is his American advisor, and they would love a shot at Keith Thurman. But again, we're talking about a Cold War issue as it relates to Al Heyman clients and someone represented by Top Rank. Now, the way you can get around that is if a sanctioning body says it's a mandatory fight, then all of a sudden you have Vasyl Lomachenko against Gary Russell. And Sean Gibbons said, we'd like to do an official eliminator with the WBA to make that a possibility, and then like Quill and Korobov, it can go to a purse bid. So is it a possibility? Yes. Is it a likelihood? Honestly, I really don't know.
All right, and then I just want to say, I mean, I haven't heard too many guys talking about it recently, but I'll be honest with you. I mean, I've been following the Verdejo fights, and that Oscar Bravo fight, I don't know. I mean, I wanted to see a little bit more head movement. Maybe the guy was just too short for him. He really didn't need it, but I don't know. It sounds to me like, or it seems to me that his defense relies a lot on footwork, which he has a very good footwork, but I don't know. I mean, it kind of worries me that I see a lack of head movement, you know, heading into bigger fights. I mean, I hope they're picking up on that, man.
Well, I thought he got a lot of Well, guys, I thought he got a lot of experience. He needed some rounds. And this is one of the things you have to work on. Like you said, when you're blowing guys out in 90 seconds like you did at the Garden on June 7th, you're not going to be able to work on anything. Now, I was told by someone at Top Rank he's going to headline the Uno Mas show October 4th in Orlando, Florida. Keep this in mind, though, guys. He's only 21 years old. This story is far from finished.
No, I agree. I mean, I want to see more. I just wanted to see a little bit more head movement. And, you know, is it a lot to say that Shapikov is among the top over there at 135?
Yeah, as long as Dave, as long as Shapikov is not in there with Miguel Vasquez, sign me up to watch him fight. He's a good little operator.
He sure is.
Yeah, hey, by the way, I mean, the last thing I'm going to say, that I wouldn't have mind seeing the guy of Shapikov on that undercard of of the Mayweather fight, because they all suck, man.
Yeah, I think you pretty much said it. They all suck.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's all I wanted to say, man. But thanks thanks for a good show, man. Thanks for taking the
all
call.
Right.
And just let me in so I can listen to the show.
All right. Don't be a stranger. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And Dave, going back to what our caller just said here, what an absolute dreck of an undercard we are forced to sit through September 13th. And the ironic thing is, the one fight that I do like, Humberto Soto against Johnny Molina, they're actually going to give it to you free on Showtime. So it almost takes away any incentive if you were on the fence to actually buy that pay-per-view.
Yeah, you know, that's what makes you wonder how Al Heyman is staying afloat in this promoting business. And I think that's why there's so many other folks thinking, like, well, if he could pull it off, we can too, as long as you got some money to back you up, because he's just a terrible matchmaker. I remember everybody was kind of bagging about the Danny Garcia and the undercard. It was all an Al Heyman thing, and they were going after the Golden Boy matchmakers, but really, Eric Gomez that was doing the matchmaking, or was it really Al Heyman? Because what I've been told, ever since, before Schaefer had left, the matchmakers of Golden Boy couldn't do their job without going across the table of Al Heyman.
That show had nothing to do with the Golden Boy matchmakers. Now, they were there on the front lines taking all the bullets. That had nothing to do with Eric Gomez or Robert Diaz. September 6th, where you have a bunch of other, like, odds makers mismatches with 20-to-1 fights, like Emmanuel Taylor, who's a decent little boxer, against Adrian Broner, and Steve Upshur Chambers being dug up for Andre Berto. Those are Heyman fights. Those are not Golden Boy fights. Now, at the same time, it is now up to Golden Boy to extricate themselves from this situation, because if you are going to continue to be a part of it, then at that point, you do deserve some of the blame for what is going on. And going back to September 13th, if there's one thing that Mayweather obviously learned from Bob Arum, that is to put on an absolute horrible pay-per-view undercard. He just doesn't have Mia St. John or Butterbean. Dave, let's get back to the calls.
Let's go with the area. And let me put this out to you. This is how bad the undercard is that if you can't sit there and can't remember who's on that undercard, can't think of one of the names that come in your head right away.
Here's the thing. It just goes to show you how forgettable it is. I mean, who in the world, and nothing against anyone that fights, but do you really want to sit through a Miguel Vasquez fight? Really? You are an absolute glutton for punishment. He's a good, solid, tricky fighter, but as the old-timers say, he's an agony fighter. In other words, it's agony to watch him.
You know, he's one of those guys that you would watch back in the 70s and 80s, and you would sit there, have a beer, talk to family members, and say, this guy's a really good technician, but I don't want to see him further than that. Unless he had a mouthpiece like a Hector Camacho, you know, he had the personality of a Pernell Whitaker who could sell fights where you wanted to see him get hurt. You were rooting to see him get hurt. Other than that, if you don't have that, you're not bringing much to the table.
No, and when I look at that undercard, I say to myself, can I find a good stream on my laptop to watch college football till about 8:15? I just as blunt as possible. If someone has a link to the UCLA Texas game, please send it my way.
Let's go with caller. Let's see. Let's get area code 516. You're on live on the.
Hey guys, this is Evan from Pennsylvania. How you doing? I haven't called in, you know, in about 3 weeks. Out of shame, you know, I was at the August 9th card at the Barclays, Steve.
And you admit it? Wow. Okay.
Well, in all fairness, you know, my short story, my buddy's like, hey, let's go. You know, I was in town for the weekend. My buddy's like, hey, let's go. We got $15 seats from a scalper. The upper bowl was closed, so they moved us down. They moved us downstairs, and then we snuck, you know, right, you know, into the best seats in the house. So that was the one positive.
More forgiving. More forgiving excuse would have been I was a chauffeur for.
But I consider myself an educated boxing fan, so I do have no excuses when it comes to that. But the reason I'm calling is I don't know if you'd heard. I was reading the Leave It to the Ring website today. You know, Frankie Randall is going through some problems. Was released from prison and is supposedly battling dementia in Texas and is homeless. And my question is, Steve, and is when it comes to fighters who are in these dire straits, and it's obviously an all too common tale, how much of the blame do you put on the fighters for not being more forward thinking and not taking care of their money, and how much blame do you put on the people around them?
You know, that's a great question because I don't always think it's boxing's fault. I don't know the particulars of the Frankie Randall situation, but it's like being a smoker nowadays. If you smoke nowadays and you get cancer, don't go around suing people. There's been a lot of evidence for years. Smoking's kind of dangerous. Don't do it. So there's enough evidence of fighters for about, I don't know, 120 years that this business is very ruthless. There's been a lot of penniless fighters that one time made a lot of money. Learn from past mistakes. And my point is, if you're being paid $1 million and your first thing is not to put 30% away because of taxes, and all you're doing is buying Escalades and platinum chains and other things, that's not on boxing. It's on you. And I don't want to be callous about it, but we are talking about professional athletes here. So at the end of the day, there is some personal accountability that has to be taken into account.
And when you talk about the Escalades and all that, is that going to be called Adrian Broneritis soon? Because that guy, you know, talk about a guy who's, you know, guys like him and Mayweather, I don't see, yeah, I know Mayweather's making tens of millions of dollars. I don't see that story, you know, ending any differently.
And that's why, you know, I'll be honest with you. If you read my writing at all, I don't really I stay away from the cliche of the game hurt this fighter and it robbed them, because a lot of times – simply not true. Simply not true. It's an archetype of a story. It makes for great copy. But a lot of the times, these fighters, if they can't do a simple thing such as put away for a Roth IRA $325 a month, don't go around blaming everybody. You got to start pulling the thumb instead of pointing the finger. Again, and this is without knowing the particulars of the Frankie Randall story, but we know the statistics of the National Football League and the NBA that it's alarming that a good percentage of these athletes who actually make more than boxers end up broke. And my point is it really the fault of the franchises or the league that this happens? I think it is.
I do know Frankie was managed by Carl King. I was just watching the first office fight the other day, and he was squarely in his corner. So that could explain part of it. But I just wanted to get your take on it, and thanks for taking the call, Steve.
Absolutely. Appreciate that. I'll hear a couple of tweets from Tyler Crute, who's on a run, letting his hands go. Hey, Steve, which is more likely to happen, Chavez Jr. fighting Canelo at 160 or boxing going back to same-day weigh-ins? Huh. That's a tough one. And here's another one. Hey, Steve, are you surprised that Peter Quillen hasn't vacated his WBO belt to fight Danny Jacobs for the WBA title? Dave, if Quillen does this, and it's a maneuver that I've heard about and it's been talked about in the back rooms, wouldn't this be one of the most cowardly moves of all time by Peter Quillen?
All time, because I think he can top himself, you know, even some more time. You know, there's still a lot more running in his boxing career. But, yeah, it'd be one of those one up there his list.
And here's another one from Tyler. Hey, Steve, do you think the Golovkin-Rubio fight will draw much higher ratings than the Daniel Gill fight? In one word, yes. The bottom line, it's the fall and it's not the summer. Summers are very, very tough to draw a rating. And Tyler has one more question. Hey, Steve, who are you and Dave's front runners for Fighter of the Year so far? Dave?
You know what? When we talk about cliches, I'm not one of those that have that. You know, I have to really sit and it's not even the end of the year yet. So right now I don't have anybody, in my opinion. I just don't got nobody, to tell you the truth.
You know, in an era when fighters fight two or three times a year at most, basically, I'm beginning to think we shouldn't even have that award. Honestly.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just almost like the fight of the year. Everybody jumps up right away. I think we're fiending so much. We want a phenomenal fight. So anything that we see with two or three good rounds out of 10 or 12 rounds, we automatically. And I don't know. It's just one of those. Nothing to me has really kind of stand out this year in boxing. Almost like last year. Last year was a little bit, but because I come from the era of watching the 67, is I expect a little bit more. Just even with my prospects. Like when I was watching the Fox Sports 1. Three guys was there. Really, none of them stood out. None of them really had me going like, this guy is going to that we're going to watch and just kind of grow to love a little bit more. You're going to see some growth out of them. I see a lot of guys that we look at and we go, these guys are good contenders, but it's about as far as they're going to go.
And here's one last tweet from Tyler. Hey, Steve, Eddie Hearn says the Chavez negotiations are going painfully slow. Is that fight dead in the water, in your opinion? Dave, here's what I know, and here's what I think. I think that Chavez is going to continue to be a headache with Bob Arum. I think the same issues that cropped up and basically expunged the Golovkin fight are going to continue to occur time and time again, and I think Chavez, like Andre Ward, will wallow on the sideline.
I tell you what, until you take out the Cheerio Bowl out of his hands and the joint out of his lips, it's not going to get any faster.
I don't disagree. I've never really been a big fan of his. I think there's a serious lack of commitment to the sport. I also believe that the enablers, one of them, obviously Top Rank, caused this. I mean, it's almost like raising a child where you never make them do chores. They continue to break curfew. And they drank in the house. Well, when that kid of yours drops out of college and then runs his car into the tree that you bought him for his 18th birthday and doesn't have a job, you caused that as a parent. That's kind of what I think Top Rank is going through. They, in many ways, conditioned this kid to have a sense of entitlement.
I agree with you all the way. It's almost, you know, I think fight fans in the beginning, just like promoters, we do what police officers do. We do profiling. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has the name. We profiled him as going to be a great fighter because his dad was. And what we end up getting was this commercial champion that we created. And he's running with it. He understands that his name is what brings the weight. Him and Canelo, I've never been major fans of. I'm starting to like Canelo a little bit more just because of the fact that, you know, Canelo is a commercial champion that was built by his promotional group. Robert Alguazar said that Golden Boy did a great job in promoting him, but they never taught him how to fight. But I think that Canelo, the difference between Canelo and Chavez is that Canelo wants to earn the trade. He wants to be great. He's trying to gear himself in that direction. But he's sitting down just listening to Cypress Hill, and he's like, for what, man? I already got it in the bag.
One thing I can say about Canelo, he does his job.
Mm-hmm.
He does his job. I mean, think about it. Yep. From the time that Chavez fought Brian Vera, and it took him two attempts to beat Brian Vera, essentially, right? We have one guy that took on a very difficult Arizlande Lara, and you can argue all day about who won the fight, but he got the decision. And then he's on to another fight sometime in November. I'll make a prediction right now. Julio Cesar Chavez will not fight the rest of this year. And by the time that if Cotto Canelo ends up happening, I'm still not convinced Chavez Jr. will come to an agreement with Bob Arum on a prize fight. Dave, let's get back to the phone lines.
Let me ask you really quick, though, Steve. Is Julio Chavez Jr., have you heard, is he hurting for monies?
I've heard that the only time he'll get serious about it is when he runs out of money. But we're talking about a child of privilege. In many ways, if there is a Kim Kardashian of boxing, it's him. And quite frankly, like I said, out of sight, out of mind, next man up. I think the game of boxing with Mikey Garcia, with Andre Ward, with any of these guys, even James Kirkland, you don't want to fight, step aside. You don't want to do your job. You don't want to show up. Don't want to make a living. Get the hell out of the way. Next man up.
Let's go with 860. You're on live right now.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? It's CT.
CT, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? I heard the rumors, but I'm not sure if it's signed yet. Do you guys know if Andy Lee is fighting Miguel Cotto? And if he is, in my personal opinion, he could be a very live underdog. And I'm not sure if they're making the right decision to fight Andy Lee.
CT, I'm the guy that actually first kind of broke that rumor report a couple of weeks ago when I was in Las Vegas. I've been told that the Cotto people, they're not really that keen on that fight because he's very tall. And no matter what you think of Andy Lee, he is a legitimate-sized middleweight. And Miguel Cotto, let's be honest, he really is a junior middleweight masquerading at 160 for one fight.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was like, that could be a difficult task for Cotto because I've seen Andy Lee fight a few times. You know, I was there lying when he fought Craig McEwen. He's very durable. All I can think of is from his last fight, that right hook he landed. And I don't know if he's, you know, he's a right-handed fighter fighting softball, but I kind of remember the same type of right hook that DeMarcus Corley hit Cotto with, and I could see Lee hitting Cotto with that same shot.
In my opinion, if Miguel Cotto is going to play these games with these catch weights, I don't think there's any shame of him just saying, you know what? I won a middleweight title against a guy that I thought was vulnerable. Move back down, Dave. Seriously.
I agree. Yep, I agree. Move back down and say, you know what? In it, and guess what? I kind of realized I got this guy out of his prime, and there's a lot of others. These guys are not out for yet. They're big, they're durable, and there's a big chance they're going to take me out. So why live through that when I got some lucrative fights going back downhill? Why not?
CT, anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, one more thing. You guys heard anything about when it was Randy Lawrence fighting? And if you guys have you heard about any opponents?
CT, I've heard Lawrence is going to come back in November or December, and a name that I'm hearing is Ishe Smith.
Oh, wow.
That's the name I heard, too. Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
CT, thank you for the call. If you want to join in, 347-215-7598. Dave, we got Amilcar, our longtime caller, at 347-658. Why don't we punch him up?
You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, good night, D. Good night, Steve. How are you guys doing?
Amilcar, welcome to the next round.
Yeah, I was actually pretty excited until I heard about that fight that you just mentioned. I do not want to see that at all.
Again, blame Heyman. Don't kill the messenger here. Blame Heyman.
That just sounds terrible. And then the next thing we're going to hear for weeks after that is how Cubans are boring. I mean, you got to look at the matchmaking. I don't know what these guys are thinking. But I actually wanted to ask you, I mean, when I grew up in the 90s, I was a teenager and all of that. Showtime used to show fights from overseas. So they would show fights with, like, Nigel Benn or Chris Eubanks or other English fighters. What is stopping HBO from doing that? Because as far as I'm concerned, the only reason – okay, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
Well, Milka, remember, that was part of a partnership. When Don King effectively took over Showtime because of the leverage he had with Mike Tyson, he was very closely aligned with Frank Warren at that time. So that was kind of a partnership they had. Now, in defense of HBO, you know, they've done some fights from overseas the last couple of years. In fact, I think they've done more overseas fights than Showtime has.
Yeah, and they've been good quality fights. I'm just thinking about this extended break. I mean, the only positive thing for me is that it's going to give them time to look for a replacement for Max Kellerman. Not that they're doing
that,
but But, I mean, look, you've got Chocolatito Gonzalez against Yagayashi. You've got Curtis Stevens against always difficult with this guy's name.
Oh, Endemcam.
Thank you very much. You've got Kiko Martinez against Carl Frampton. I mean, all of these, to me, are main event fights for HBO Boxing After Dark. And as an HBO subscriber, like, that's something that I definitely want to see, each of those fights.
Emilko, remember the night of August 9th when you had the triple homicide taking place on Showtime at the Barclays Center? BN had a little, I think it was a junior flyweight or a strawweight unification bout between, I think, Rodriguez and Takayama, I believe it is,
yes,
which
was
an amazing fight. Right, and it was the fight of the year, in my opinion.
Totally agree.
And you're right. BN, and I wrote this in my final flurries today, they're creating a very nice little niche with these fights. And this is my point to HBO. Going way back to 1996, the concept of Boxing After Dark was about the little guys. At what point did they lose their way with BAD?
Right.
That's the question I want
to answer. That's how I was introduced to Marco Antonio Barrera and other fighters when I was a kid. You know, that's what HBO Boxing After Dark was all about. You were going to say something there, David?
No, I was just agreeing with you guys. I mean, you know, I remember one conversation me and you, Steve, we had, and I was bringing up the subject about Showtime, how really up, and I think by this year they probably have already surpassed the numbers in ratings and viewers HBO. And in my head, when we were talking about this, you said, "Just the bottom line, HBO needs to wake up and need to put together fights. No matter, and they just got to start filling up the cards on the telly." And that's something that I don't understand what they're trying to do. Are they to really just fall by a thumb? Hey, you know, it's puzzling. I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, here's where I think they are handcuffed. A lot of these guys, once you're represented by Al Haymon, you become persona non grata. But I think going back to Miracle's original point to his call, a lot of these small guys, the Lilliputians, the little midgets, they're not aligned with them. I know one of the Japanese guys, the Kameda brothers, I think one of them now is with Al Haymon. But a lot of these fights, and I've said this for years, when it comes to Brian Valoria, Tyson Marquez, and you know all the other names, going way back to Mark Two Sharp Johnson, I've always said if you're not going to make them the main event, because I do understand there's a ratings issue with that, they are relatively inexpensive alternatives on pay-per-view cards or as co-main events, as little appetizers before the main entree. I don't need to see some of the stuff that I'm seeing where it's literally 50-1 on premium cable. That's shameful.
Yeah, they're always exciting fights. And, you know, just look at it as a return on investment. I mean, that whole card at the Barclays Center here in New York, it was terrible. And it didn't sell any tickets. So I just don't even understand the justification for favoring those type of fights and those type of fighters. But, you know, obviously the dudes that are listening to this show, people like me, we're hardcore fans. I mean, one of the reasons we call in is because, honestly, very few people within our circles even care about this stuff. So I'm probably just yelling at a wall here. But, you know, I respect you guys for taking my call. Thanks a lot.
Amilcar, thank you very, very much. And going back to his point, Dave, one of the best fights I remember of 2012 was a unification bout at 112 between the Hawaiian Punch, Brian Valoria, against Tyson Marquez that took place at the Sports Arena in L.A., and it was an exciting night. It was one of the four or five best fights of the year. And I know for a fact that Gary Gittleson, Valoria's manager, tried to pitch that fight to everybody. And I remember, I think it ended up on Wealth TV. And I really don't know a lot of people with that network.
Right.
And I thought, here's a world-class fight, and this is what we get. And I thought it was almost insulting. But again, the television networks, blame the executives. They are ultimately the ones who decide what goes on their air. Dave, let's get back to the phone lines.
Let's go with area code 787. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind? 787, are you out there?
Oh, we got a knockdown here.
All right, let's go with, let's see, area code 951. You're on live right now. On your mind. 951, you there?
We got two knockdowns.
714, you're on live right now. The next round, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Well, are you talking into a tin can? You may want to call back because we can't hear you now. Let's go to the next call here, Dave.
Let's go with area code 650. You're on live right now. Next round, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Jess from the Bay Area.
Jess, what's going on, man?
Hey, you know what? I was bored this weekend, and I actually spent the $15 and watched the Mike Jones fight.
Really? You didn't go to the Fairfield?
Yeah, you mean Mike Jones is going to return now in 2018?
And, you know, like what you were just saying, Steve, like these just horrible undercards and just horrible cards in general. Now, that was a great fight. It was an action-packed, all-around good fight. The co-main event was a great fight.
Interesting.
What? Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was very impressed. Why can't matchmakers, you know, come up with a good fight? Like, who wouldn't want
to
see...
You know why? Because many times they're instructed not to. I mean, if you're a matchmaker for Golden Boy or Top Rank, especially at the prospect level, you get your guys beat, you might get fired. That's
exactly
the bottom line. I mean, it's not like the old days where Teddy Brenner of Madison Square Garden, when the Madison Square Garden did not promote individual fighters, they promoted fights. So they would just make the best fights that could sell the most amount of tickets. They didn't have a house fighter. They didn't have a vested interest per se. Once that dynamic changed, I think that's when you started to see this trend here of the built-up record. And when you go to a certain fight, every guy in the blue corner on the left side of the bout sheet would beat the other guy in the red corner who's on the right side of the bout sheet.
God,
it was almost
horrible.
Like it was predetermined.
Right. And also, I want to mention the budget, too. A lot of times these matchmakers are given a certain amount they can put a fighter. And some of the budget that they're offered is, I wouldn't even buy in it with the person they're trying to get me with. I mean, X amount, that's not even worth for me traveling out there. It's not going to cover my hotel or my gas. So I think as well.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, just for instance, like this Gabriel Rosado. Wouldn't you rather see him fight Rubio than Triple G?
Yeah, I guess, but at the same time, Rubio would rather be paid to fight Triple G than Rosado at this stage of his life.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, that's going to be a complete flop.
Jeff,
yeah.
Well, are you sure about that? I think Rubio Golovkin, in terms of ticket sales, I'm telling you right now, Jeff, I have never felt this much buzz and excitement over a fight at the StubHub Center than this. I think they have a chance to sell every single ticket.
Well, yeah, of course, because, you know, the Mexicans love both fighters, but I don't give Rubio any shot whatsoever. I think he's going to get knocked out within five.
You know what? I don't disagree, but there is a Tyson effect, Dave. I don't know if you agree with me, that we know it's going to be a knockout, but like with Tyson, we want to see it anyway.
We want to see it anyways. Yeah, exactly. You know, we want to see this train wreck happen in front of our eyes. That's why we're going to see it. I got to tell you this. Rubio's being counted out pretty bad. I've a couple of fans that I've spoken to, you know, off the air, you know, right, just like you. I agree with you. I think it's going to go five or six. But, look, I think we need to take account that Rubio is not a dumb fighter. He can put in some rounds, and he's a tough, tough, durable guy. He can take a punch. How much absorbment is he going to take of the end he's going to do? I'm not really sure yet. But I think that he's going to give a really good fight, and it's going to be some tickets worth, you know, that you're going to be satisfied. You're going to be happy that you bought the ticket, or you're going to be happy that you sat down. on television. Either way, I think you're going to be satisfied on what's going to happen. There's going to be some explosions between the two.
Jeff, are you buying the Mayweather-Madonna pay-per-view?
Hey, you know, I'm getting married the following weekend, so I don't know if I can, but yeah, I'll drink the Kool-Aid. I just, you know, it's like boxing is my thing, you know. So
all right, well, Jeff, I just want to let you know, as soon as your beautiful bride sees that cable bill, you may be on Couch City USA. That honeymoon may be literally over very soon. I'm just letting you know, Jeff.
Or you may be on that traveling bus with Gabriel Montoya, the Burning Man, okay? Let me let you know about
that. One more question for you guys. You know, Don King says he wants to make this Stiver and Wilder fight in Egypt. And then he says,
only in Egypt!
But he said, and then afterwards, he said Mike Tyson is going to come back and he's going to be the second oldest heavyweight champ.
Wow.
What are the chances of either one of those things happening?
None. Don is now delusional king. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. Jess, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Dave, we have a caller at 347-307. Let's pick up his line.
Okay, caller 347, you're on live right now in the next round. What's on your mind?
What's up, guys? This is Mike from New York. I just got a couple questions.
Mike, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I've been reading a lot about Andre Ward's legal problems with Dan Goosen, and I know Mikey Garcia has the same with Top Rank, but why don't we hear any news about his court proceedings, but you hear everything about Andre Ward's?
You know why? Here's the difference, because Andre Ward's done this like 3 or 4 times. And there's still actually 2 more outstanding pieces of litigation as it relates. Mikey Garcia is just a continuum of the same case that was brought about, I believe, in March, if I'm not mistaken. While if you look at Andre Ward, he's already dropped unanimous decision after unanimous decision after unanimous decision. I mean, this thing here is becoming Jake LaMotta against Ray Robinson, except that LaMotta actually won once out of 6 attempts. That's why.
Because from a fan's perspective, I was thinking maybe Mikey Garcia is going, listen, I got to make some money. I'll go back to the Top Rank. But from what you're saying, Steve, it doesn't seem like that.
I let's put it this way. I wouldn't count on him fighting either. In other words, Garcia, Ward, and Chavez, they will be doing a triple header on Bolivian, November 22nd of never.
The only really one I care about is Garcia because I think he's put on some fun fights, but it just sucks as a
fan.
Well,
here's a question I ask a lot of people. We know what Andre Ward is. We know how good he is. We know how effective he is. Do you care if he never fights again?
I was an Andre Ward fan, but the more he speaks, almost in the media, the more I kind of go, am I really a fan of this guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got to give myself a lot of credit, and the sound you hear is me patting myself on the back. I figured that guy out long before anyone else. He is not the guy everyone thinks he is. I'm sorry. He's not this great guy. He's not what is right about boxing. He is what he is.
Yeah, it's the way sometimes he talks to the media. But I don't think he's a bad guy, but sometimes it almost seems like he's delusional about how big he is. And plus, like, it got me thinking, like, how old is Andre Ward? 31, 30?
31.
Okay, a 49-year-old is going to fight a guy he said he didn't want to fight. You know what
Well,
I mean?
How about this? Mike, that 49-year-old is actually more active than Andre Ward. Just think about that.
Exactly.
Right.
It makes me go, like, why are you staying at 168? You cleaned out the division. You know, why not go to 175? But I don't know. Maybe he wants to fight. Maybe he's like the Bernard Hopkins of this era who's going to stand for what he believes in. But I don't know. Sooner or later, you got to make money, right?
You know, the sad thing about it with Ward is that you were sympathetic for him when he started as a pro because he wasn't fighting anybody. And the general idea was point the finger at, you know, at Hunter. You know, everybody thought that. Like, oh, he's the guy that's taking control of his career, is not letting him prosper, is not letting him get out of the prospect, light. But now that you start thinking about it, Ward is the guy that has complete control of his career. And it just makes you wonder, did he have control of his career in the beginning? Because you know what? His track record of having control of his career has not been very good. And to answer your question, Steve, would you care to see him come back? I think Barry has already forgotten about him already. I don't think anybody remembers, nobody cares anymore, because the fact is that you're only remembered when you lace up the gloves and you're only remembered when you walk into the ring.
You know, there's a history here with Andre Ward, though. Not only has he had multiple lawsuits against Goosen, he's also tried to sue to get away from James Prince. And that's a fact. And just a
right.
side note, James Prince is like Ray Donovan. He's not the type of guy you fire. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I just got, like, answering your question, Steve, I want to see Andre Ward fight again, but under the stipulation that he fights a cold left, he goes to England to fight Frotch. You know what I mean? I want to watch him fight under my stipulations, because I know I'm just a fan, so he's not going to fight just because I want him to fight. But in certain ways, I'd like to see him fight. But if it's another Edwin Rodriguez fight in Oakland, I mean, I'm in New York. I'm not going to go see that. You know what I mean? I'll watch it on HBO. Maybe not even live, but I'll watch it. But not something like I got on my to-do list. You know what I mean?
Mike, he fought last year in November against Edwin Rodriguez in Ontario. It was one of the I've seen mausoleums with more life than the Citizens Business Bank Arena that night. And the whole time I kept thinking to myself, I'd much rather be watching college football. And this is after Miami just got dusted by Duke. And I'm still thinking to myself, I'd much rather still be watching college football. And if I wasn't paid by Boxing News to cover that fight, so literally you had to pay me to show up to watch an Andre Ward fight, but it was dreary. And here's a guy that literally says to fans, I don't care about you guys. I fight to win. I'm not here to do entertainment. If you guys are bored, that's your problem. So, Mike, I've said this on other shows. If a restaurant told you, we don't care if you don't like our food and we give you food poisoning, would you go back there?
Not to the restaurant. No, of course not. Of course not.
Right.
Okay, you can go there. You can go there.
Just real quick, Mike, you know the sad part about it is that when Ward finally realizes he's supposed to fight for the people, supposed to fight for the fans because that's who pays your bills, okay? Is this going to be too late? We saw that with Roy Jones' career where he was a guy that said, I don't care what you guys want. You're going to give what I'm going to force feed you, and that's it. Then finally when everything ended, his skill level, and he got knocked out, that's when he was like, you know what? I want the bigger fights. I want the dangerous fights. I want the fights that people were demanding in the beginning, and that's what I'm going to give you. And nobody cared anymore because we weren't seeing the same guy. And to me, I get this strange feeling that the longer Ward sits out there, the longer he's going to just let his prime just kind of just flow out into the distance. And then when he gets back, he's going to not just repairment with the fans themselves, but repairment in the ring. He's got to shake off the ring rust and everything else that comes behind that, but it might be a little too late. I think the time when we finally get Ward to really be serious about his career and really want to be in the ring, it might be too late. We might end up saying another phase of a Roy Jones Jr. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, but without the money, man.
Oops.
You guys still
Mike,
there?
Is there anything else?
There?
Is there anything else, okay. Mike?
Are you guys there?
Yeah,
we're here. What can we do for you, Mike?
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I had someone hung up. But the thing is, you don't hear about these fighters after they lose. It seems like no one's talking about them. It's like, what's the next for Ruslan? When's Ruslan's next fight? Just because he looked
like... You
know,
Ruslan's people, they want Brandon Rios. The desire is not mutual. So I think a fight that they're talking about, and I don't know if Ruslan's people want it, but I think they may have no choice, is Louis Abreu. And as far as I'm concerned... Sign me up for some of that.
Is that a 147 fight? Or
yes. I think it would be a 147.
Yeah, I agree. All right, guys, thank you for the call. I just wanted to ask the question about Mike Garcia.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. We got about 15 minutes left here. 347-215-7598. Real quickly, Dave, what were your thoughts on Austin Trout this past Friday night?
You know, I thought Austin looked like Austin. He got knocked down, which was kind of surprising there. You know, I knew Dawson was a tough guy, but I didn't think he was going to be able to catch him. But I think that he caught him on early because he got a little lazy. I thought that he started to reach. Teddy Atlas even pointed that out. But I thought as soon as he adjusted and he figured out, you know what, I can't, you know, play too tricky with this guy and stick my chin out there too long because he's going to catch me, I'm going to be able to take over, and he was dominant. I'd like to see where he goes from there. You know, I don't know. I think it always depends on what kind of opponent you put in front of Trout that's going to make him look good. Every time out you put him in with somebody that's, you know, a step above him, he's not going to know what to do. You know, his style is to box, but He's got that weird style, Steve. I don't know what you think, but he's got that weird style where he likes to put a little bit of pressure, almost like he believes that he has power, which he did kind of show. He's got a great solid jab, and he's got a great straight left, but it's just not enough to keep the bigger and more skillful guys at bay.
I think the alarming thing about Austin Trout, in the last three fights, he's hit the canvas 4 times. So that is a little bit alarming, and I wonder, is he really elite at this moment? I certainly think at the very least he's a relevant guy, he's well-connected, and I think they need to get him busy again. He said, I need some time off, but he wants to get back to fighting regularly, and he's one of these fighters, Dave, he's much more comfortable counterpunching than he is leading, and I think that was shown against Daniel Dawson. Dave, let's get back to the phone lines.
Let's go with area code 310. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good. What's going on?
Not much. Just wanted to touch upon something you guys spoke about earlier, the Cold War, the Canelo-Cotto thing, how it might happen in May. And as much as I would love to see that happen, because I do think that date should belong to a Hispanic fighter, not necessarily Mexican, but a Hispanic fighter at least, and I'd love to see that get taken away from Mayweather. Now that Cotto feels that he's in the driver's seat because he's the middleweight champion of the world, I just can't see that happening, being that if he waits a month later, it's the Puerto Rican Day Parade, and he can fight in Madison Square Garden. I want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
That's a good
idea.
Yeah,
here's the thing, though. What dance partner can they each find that will give them the type of economic clout of this fight? I mean, listen, Cotto understands the business. I mean, he certainly taught Sergio Martinez what it's like to be the A-side. I think he's smart enough to know, and I would think that the other people around him, from Freddie Roach to Bob Arum to Gabby, they understand Canelo is also an A-side. So you're going to have basically, I'm not saying it's a 50-50 split, but the pot of revenue will, I think, be much more even than it was for the Sergio Martinez fight.
I definitely see him taking the Canelo fight. I just don't see him giving in to saying, okay, Canelo, I'm going to fight you on Mexican. Exactly, yeah. I just don't see him giving in on that. I definitely see him saying, hey, I want to fight you. I just don't see him giving up that date.
You know, I think that
I think it'll be a power struggle.
I kind of agree with you, but at the same time, I agree with Steve. I think that any economically, you're going to look at the purse and you're going to look at the A side. And I think Cotto's going to understand, listen, if I'm going to give up a date, then I got to feel a little bit more comfortable. And the only way I'm going to feel comfortable with that is I got to get a bigger piece of that pie. And we've seen with Canelo that he's willing to give up to get a lot, you know, and that would
That's
be
true.
The lot part would be the fight itself. So I could see it happening only if Cotto gets to get pretty much everything in line that he feels is going to be comfortable for him to take on that date. So it's going to be interesting if it goes to negotiations. You know, I mean, I often wondered about that myself. Steve, what do you think?
Well, listen, these guys are franchises. And I think, again, I'm going to reiterate my point. He understood with Sergio Martinez he could enforce a very, very punitive split. But when you're talking about Cotto Canelo, I think he understands he's going to have to give up at least 40 to 45% of the money. The bottom line is Canelo is a franchise. Sergio Martinez was a guy that was on a lot of Indian casino shows with just okay ratings on HBO. That's all he was. Canelo in his own right is a pay-per-view franchise. They realize that. I don't think they're going to blow this fight. That's my opinion.
Got it. And two more things. One, the Cold War, Top Rank, Golden Boy, HBO Showtime. How much of that do you guys think really has to do with Mayweather being involved with Golden Boy?
Oh, listen, my former colleague in Max Boxing, Doug Fisher, says he's a large part to do with it. Because, you know, Mayweather has, well, excuse the French, a hard-on for Bob Arum and Top Rank. And when you're with Arum, you're basically persona non grata to Mayweather. He said that, and it certainly cropped up with the whole Pacquiao situation. So do I believe that Mayweather and Heyman together, and they are joined at the hip, are responsible for a lot of this? I would say yes.
Yeah, because being now that Mayweather Promotions got their promoter's license and they're supposed to be doing their own shows, I'm wondering if Golden Boy's going to step back and maybe get back to the point where they were at before, where they were making great fights with Top Rank and any other promoter that was out there on HBO.
Well, Dave, isn't that what Oscar promised?
Yep, sure was.
I mean, we should never – I mean, he promised that he was going to be the impetus for change. Okay, Oscar. Well, I don't care what you do in your personal life. I don't care what pictures are out there. I really believe that no matter what Oscar has been through, no matter what he's done in the past, he gets this done, all is good. All is good as long as he makes that happen.
Yeah, I agree. You know, but it's a little harder than said, and as he could see now for himself, he could finally see for himself. Or is it, Steve?
You know, I think that the Hopkins-Kovalev fight is a positive first step. I think he still has to work out his legal situation with Richard Schaefer, and then they have to figure out which fighters are under contract to Golden Boy and which fighters are just bound to Al Haymon. Once that is figured out, then we can move forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as long as he stays aware and awake and sober and keeps a close eye on those contracts, I think he's on to a good start. Well, he's headed to a great start. So there you go.
Got it. And you just touched upon the last thing that I was going to ask. Does anyone know what the latest with Mr. Dick Schaefer is?
There's a rumor that he is a consultant for BKB, which officially hired Bruce Benkow, the former COO of Golden Boy. But I don't know if that's confirmed or not. But I believe that the lawsuit that Oscar De La Hoya hatched upon Schaefer, it's not just about monetary damages. I think they're trying to run him completely out of the business.
Well, I hope that's the case.
All right, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks,
guys. I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are feeling the same. Let's go with area code 931. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Keep calm and sing Rocket Top, people. How
hey,
you doing?
Hey, Eduardo, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Steve and Dave? How you doing?
Good, man.
Good.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just, you know, yeah, the Canelo fight is a big money fight, but you know what? I'd rather watch part two of The Passion of Christ. I want to see Cotto be crucified by Gennady Golovkin. That's what I
hold on. Wait, Eduardo, wait a minute. Aren't you Puerto Rican?
I don't. You know what? Look, I'm going to tell you honestly. Yes, I am Puerto Rican. Yes, I am. However, I'm tired of Cotto, the first four-division chump, okay? He picked on a wounded animal, so, you know, you got to give him credit, but I don't give him nothing. He's a chump.
Wow.
I don't buy into this Cotto. I want to see him get crucified. I want to see him get beat, put on a cross, and everything. Yeah, I'm done.
Let me ask you this. Because, you know, the start of hate really started with De La Hoya was when De La Hoya got in the ring with Julio Cesar Chavez, okay? And that really just left a lot of Mexicans, you know, just hate them. They left a bad taste. Do you think that, because, you know what, you're not the first Puerto Rican that I've spoken to, man, where they got just some genuine hate for Miguel Cotto. Do you think that comes from because of the fact that Cotto's fans have tried to make him seem like he was going to be a much bigger star or you know, a star in Puerto Rico than Tito Trinidad?
Yes. Yes. He didn't live up to the hype. That's the issue. And you know, everybody loves the winner. Like, for example, when the first loss to Margarito, I took it on the chin. I said, it's okay. You know, he took a good loss. It's okay. Whatever. But then Manny Pacquiao to Catchway. And then you keep on going. And really, really, it's like he just failed to everything. And you reform him. And then now he's a Catchway chump. As well, like just like Pacquiao and Floyd and Canelo.
Guys, let me chime in here.
I'm not cool. I'm not cool with catchweight. That's just me.
I actually did a story on Puerto Rican boxing, like a 3-4-part series on the dynamics of Puerto Rican boxing on the island and the whole culture. And one of the writers, Jose Sanchez, who's one of the most respected Puerto Rican sports writers, basically said, Felix Trinidad is universally beloved. He's that guy that everybody likes. If he was a barber, or if he was your gardener, or if he was your accountant, he'd be that guy that you like. He's still the most friendly guy. Cotto, yep. He flat out said, a lot of us don't like him. He can mm-hmm. be a little impersonal. He, I don't want to say rude, because he's a very, very shy guy. I do believe that. He's an often brooding character. I like Miguel myself in my interactions, but he's not the gregarious type like mm-hmm. Felix Trinidad. And I think it's like Larry Holmes coming after Muhammad Ali. It's like the worst personality that you could have been. And I think that's unfair to Cotto, because I think he's been a very honorable fighter. I don't know. I think a little bit of it's unfair, because Cotto is not this vivacious, colorful guy by nature. And I just find that interesting. And that's why I think Felix Verdejo, with that million-dollar smile and the fact he's so friendly, I think that guy is going to resonate. Cotto is a guy, I've always said, you respect him, but you don't necessarily love him. And I think that's a key difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's bougie. He's a type of person that we say in Spanish, come pollo y caga pavo. He eats chicken and he shits turkey. And yep. It doesn't work that way. You know what I'm saying? He's like too good for us. Mom, please, you ain't too good for nothing.
Even though he wears
so.
Pink Crocs?
Oh, my God, that's even worse. Don't get me started, Steve. Come on.
You know what I've always said?
Don't do this.
I've always said about Cotto and Trinidad. Trinidad's that kid across the street that plays catch with your kids and, you know, throws the ball in the backyard. He rides the bicycle. He always waves to you. And he goes to the same school as your kids and you carpool and you take him home. And, you know, Cotto's the kid that lives down the block. Right. And so Cotto is that guy that lives like a couple blocks down. And he goes to the rich private school, never says hi to you, and while you're driving that junky car on his 18th birthday, he gets the Mercedes-Benz, and he looks down upon you as a person, and he just kind of lives differently. That's the difference. Trinidad is the kid that lives across the street that plays catch with your kids. Cotto is the guy that goes to the private school that drives a very fancy car at age 18 and just drives right past you and never says hello to you. I think that's the difference between those two. But again, I don't think that's necessarily a reason to completely be down on Cotto. That's his personality.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. But you know what? Here's the thing, too, though. I think that left a lot of Latinos, not just Puerto Ricans, but Latinos in general, left them salty with Miguel Cotto was that segment. When he gets out of bed, Steve, with his best friend, the machismo en Latinos, we all looked at that. I mean, I got to tell, my son was sitting next to me. I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, Dad, don't even say it. I just say, yo, I mean, you guys' generation is different, okay? But you better not do that kind of stuff, bro, because that just doesn't fly, you know?
Jeez. Oh,
and the only one, I got to tell you, the only one that seemed to support Miguel Cotto, and I'm going to receive the hate mail like crazy, it seems to be the metrosexual Latinos, the guys that like to pluck their eyebrows all thin and everything. I don't know.
Wait, hold on.
And I approve this message.
Hold on. Wait one cotton picking moment. This show, I was at the Cotto fight June 7th. That's not all. I didn't just see the Ricky Martin demographic. Okay, I'm sorry. That is not true. You're literally telling me all 18,000 of those fans at the Madison Square Garden or that guy? I disagree, Dave. I think Eduardo, I completely disagree. He has been a fine representative of Puerto Rican boxing. I don't see how you can't say that.
I agree. I think so, too. You know, I think that he is really a definition of what a Latino fighter is supposed to be. You take on the challenges. You keep going mm-hmm. out there and doing your best. He takes a beating. I mean, let's be honest here. He goes out there and he does put his all. Whether you like the fact that it's a catch weight, whether you like the fact that it's not the fight he should have took, he goes out mm-hmm. there and it gives you a performance. So when you're going to buy into his fights, you know what? I'm going to at least get a great performance. So
the best beast fighter on the island. The best beast fighter.
All right, listen,
island.
Eduardo, we got to get going, okay? Our time is running out here.
All right, people, have a good night, y'all.
All right, Wepa. Anyway, well, we want to wrap this up here. And, Dave, thanks for filling in. Programming reminder, we will not be on the air next week, Labor Day night, because – quite frankly, the Miami Hurricanes are opening at Louisville as the Brad Kaya era begins, and there's no way in hell I was going to do a show on that particular night. Nothing against you guys. We'll be back the next week with Gabe Montoya and myself. So on behalf of David Gwyneth and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, to the next round, goodbye, everybody.
Good night.